Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed...
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Beep. This was a test of the Tech Stuff podcast system. If this were not a test, you would have heard a pun by now.
That's true.
So we wanted to do an episode about the emergency broadcast system. This was actually a request that was sent in by a couple of different listeners, which is interesting because it doesn't really technically exist anymore. Now we have a new system in the United States called the Emergency Alert System. Also, I should apologize to all of our listeners from places other than the United States. This is a very United States-centric podcast, but it's interesting anyway. Trust me.
Well, it's become something that's important in most situations, too. I mean, tragedies and big events that happen in places all over the world. So the question is, you've got a country. It doesn't have to necessarily be the United States, but you have a country, you have millions of people living there, and something is happening. There's an earthquake or a tsunami or some other kind of accident, or another country is invading or something like that. You know, something big where you need to tell people, hey, look out, there's something, you need to evacuate, you need to get out of there. How do you address so many people in a short time? Now, for the United States, what inspired this was the need to reach out to people during World War II.
Right.
And there wasn't a system.
And subsequently the Cold War.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole, the end of the Second World War ended, of course, with the dropping of two atomic bombs on Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was apparent because other countries had that technology pretty much right away. And, that the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union began shortly after that. And then there was a, there was a big fear in the United States, but about what would happen if the Soviet Union launched a nuclear attack on the United States. How do you warn people? And they said, well, you know, judging by what we did in World War II, that was fairly effective. But we need a system.
Right.
We need a plan. We need to figure out how we can do this effectively and let everybody know in a short period of time, because we're not going to have long. We need to have a short period of time, a message in place. How can we reach out to people?
Right.
And that was basically the birth of what now is the emergency alert system. But at that point, was known as ConAlrad.
Yes. In fact, which was, by the way, kind of sort of an acronym for a control of electromagnetic radiation, which is kind of terrifying,
what?
Right?
Yeah.
But that was established in 1951 by under the administration of Harry S. Truman.
Mm-hmm.
Quick. Trivia. What does the S stand for?
Nothing.
That's right. Harry S. Truman stood for nothing. Wait, no, that's not right.
S.
No, the S stood for nothing.
He just wanted it. He liked it. Sort of, you know, like Michael J. Fox.
Yeah. So you don't say, like, the S stands for nothing. Like, nothing isn't spelled with S. I don't mean to confuse you. The S doesn't mean anything. So the control of electromagnetic radiation, getting back on track. Prior to 1951, these alerts went out over radio stations. They would get, like, an emergency bulletin, and it was pretty much up to the station whether or not they read it. ConAlrad kind of established a specific protocol that needed to be followed in the event of an emergency. And originally, the idea was that it would alert citizens of the United States of an impending attack from the Soviet Union. In those days, we're talking about before intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Yeah.
So these attacks would take the form of bombers flying overhead. And so ConAlrad had two main purposes, really. One was to issue alerts to citizens to try and get them to safety as soon as possible in the case of an attack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the second was to minimize the ability of the Soviets to target specific areas based on radio frequencies. So part of the ConAlrad protocol was that radio stations would shut down and they would only broadcast in a certain amount of time and under certain frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
So under the ConAlrad protocol, you essentially had this is what would happen if someone were to issue an alert. By the way, no alert was ever issued. It was originally called a key station system.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that you had these dedicated telephone circuits that connected the air defense control centers to certain key radio stations called basic key stations.
Mm-hmm.
If there were an impending attack, the Air Defense Control Center would issue the alert to the key radio stations, these basic key stations, that would then issue that same alert to relay key stations. These would be smaller regional radio stations. So it was sort of a hierarchy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It went from Air Defense Control Centers to a certain number of basic radio stations to every other radio station. Once they received the alert, the radio stations would then broadcast a predetermined message out to the listeners. And the way it would work is that the stations would turn off for 5 seconds. So they'd stop transmitting for 5 seconds, come back on for 5 seconds, go off for 5 more seconds, then come on and transmit a tone for 15 seconds. Now, this was the audible alert saying something is up.
Mm-hmm.
You get the predetermined message. Actually, really what you had to do was tune to one of two frequencies. There was a frequency, the 640 kilohertz frequency and the 1240 kilohertz frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these two frequencies were the only two that were authorized to broadcast during one of these emergencies. And on radios at the time, you would see this little symbol over those frequencies.
Yep.
And it was a triangle inside a circle, and that's the civil defense mark.
Yeah, you might remember the symbol was sort of red, white, and blue if you've seen it around. And it's still not terribly uncommon to see it every once in a while someplace.
Yeah. So, but that was saying, like, these are the two frequencies. If your favorite radio station isn't on, tune into this station because this is where the information is going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
It was not the best system for a couple of different reasons. One was that it was prone to false alarms like an electrical storm could set off a false alarm because you're talking about electricity and radio frequencies. There is a relationship there, and we have talked about that extensively on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So listen to our episodes about radio to learn more about electromagnetism, radio waves, and electricity because I can't go into it here. But the lightning strikes could cause false alarms, which is, you know, a bad thing if you've been told that this alert system means that there's an impending attack from Soviet planes, it might cause a little stress. Also, the switching mechanism, because it would make transmitters switch on and off in this the sequence could cause transmitters to fail over time. They just from powering up and powering down so frequently within a certain amount of time. And then, of course, this whole system, this idea of cutting off radio contact so that you could minimize the ability for Soviets to target in on specific regions, it became meaningless once intercontinental ballistic missiles became a real thing.
Right.
Because now you're not talking about planes anymore. You're talking about guided missiles and or at least targeted missiles. So it became clear that CONELRAD was starting to no longer be very relevant. So the government started to think, well, what can we do that will provide a similar method for us to message out emergency notices, but use a different approach? And that was what sort of led into the development of the emergency broadcast system, EBS.
Yep. In 1963, EBS made its debut. Again, it never was used, of course, to communicate the threat of war.
Not on purpose.
We'll get there. But, I'm assuming that you listened to the WOWO.
Oh, I did.
That was fun.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah, I mean, it was a much more robust system.
Yep. Introduced during the Kennedy administration, for those of you keeping track.
Yep. And, one of the nice things about it is, here again, you could kind of tell, kind of judge the mood too. If you had heard something come over CONELRAD, you probably immediately would have thought war.
Yeah.
But EBS was actually used for other things too.
Right.
I remember weather alerts coming in using the exact same thing. And so you would hear, and this was used on multiple radio stations. You didn't necessarily have to tune into one radio station to get your information. It would be broadcast over TV and radio.
Yeah, because you no longer had to worry about that targeting issue. Then
right.
It meant that all the stations could be used instead of having to tune into a specific one while everything else is turned off.
And hey, that's more effective anyway to reach
people.
But yeah, you would hear this tone, it's hard to explain it if you've never heard it.
Ear-splitting.
Other than ear-splitting and annoying.
Yeah.
It does get your attention.
Apparently, it's the combined sine waves of 853 hertz and 960 hertz, specifically chosen because it does grab your attention because it's very jarring.
Yes.
To hear it is just, you can't ignore it. If
no.
you can hear, you can't ignore it.
That's true. And of course, those of us who are familiar with it, other than, living somewhere where there are multiple weather situations like tornadoes or hurricanes.
Thank you, tornadoes.
Yeah, no kidding. You would probably have heard this through the alerts, which Jonathan and I grew up with, which was
the testing.
Yeah, they would say they would come on and say, "Well, this is a test of the emergency broadcast system," and
next 60 seconds, we will be testing out the emergency broadcast system. There was actually a very specific script that it would follow.
Yes.
And then there would be after they would tell you there's a test coming, they would play this tone. And then there'd be another message that would appear at the end saying, "This was a test of the emergency broadcast system. If this had been a real emergency, you would have received more information at this point, alerting you to blah, 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 blah. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming type stuff."
Yeah, and they were required to do this test
once a week.
Yeah, on a regular basis. I didn't think it was quite that frequently.
It was once a week unless you had actually had to issue a real alert.
Oh, okay.
If you had to issue a real alert, you could skip over some time. But it was once a week at essentially a random time between 8:30 in the morning and sunset at night, sometime during the week.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that we'll get into this too. There wasn't a time where every single station had to do it at the same time. It was unique to the various stations. And, like you were saying, Chris, these alerts went out not just for a national emergency. In fact, they never went out on purpose for a national emergency. Instead, it was never used purposefully for that reason, even though that was the genesis of this system. It was used more than, several thousand times to alert for civil emergencies, sometimes an alert about, to be on the lookout for a suspect in a particularly nasty crime. That could be an alert. Or for the weather alerts, like the ones that Chris and I grew up with. I can remember that happening so many times. Well, the way the emergency broadcast system worked was that the only message that no station could ignore or was supposed to ignore was a national one.
Yeah.
Right? So if you are a radio station in the middle of nowhere and the national alert goes out, you were supposed to broadcast it just like every other station in the country.
Right.
Whereas if it were local or regional, you may or may not have been able to ignore that message and not broadcast it. The way it worked was that, again, like the CONELRAD system where you had the key stations, the basic key stations and the relay key stations,
mm-hmm.
it was a similar setup for the emergency broadcast system. You had these primary points of contact, which mm-hmm. would be major broadcast stations usually. But these primary points of contact had to broadcast all the alerts they got. They had no choice because they were a primary point of contact. But if you were further down the chain, like you were a secondary point or further down,
mm-hmm.
then you could elect whether or not to broadcast that alert, assuming it wasn't a national alert. That was the only one, of course, everyone had to broadcast.
Right.
So, that explains why you might be in an area where a weather service alert is being broadcast, and you saw it on one channel, but you switch to another local channel and there's nothing. That could be why. Mm-hmm. It may be that that other channel's not a primary point and therefore was not required to broadcast it.
Mm-hmm. Now the incident that Jonathan mentioned.
Famous incident.
Now, I read an account of this from a person who was working at a radio station in St. Louis at the time it happened.
Yeah. And the time it happened, by the way, is February 20th, 1971.
Yep. And what he had said was that every Saturday at 10:33, the radio stations would receive a test message from Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado. And so basically it would say – and there was a code word – that it would include, that would let you know that it was genuine. And so, at 10:33, there was a teletype machine in the other room and he heard it. And typically it would ding a couple times to let you know, hey, there's something on the wire, you know, a news story on the wire. But this one rang 10 times, which he knew was a big deal. So he ran in to the other room and got a message that said, he needed to broadcast a warning that there was an announcement coming from the national, you know, from the federal government, and it was something bad and impending, and be on the alert because it was time to broadcast a message. But they really weren't told
what that message was.
What it was.
Well, see, here's the thing.
Hateful. Hateful.
Which was a code word meaning that the code – that was actually a code word. The hateful was a code word that meant – there's
there's
a message
that's
coming up. There's an attack coming up, but more details will follow. Go ahead and initiate the alert system.
Yes.
And it was a mistake that was made by a teletype operator who sent this authenticated code out to the system, which meant it went to all those primary points of contact.
And it didn't say a minute later, oops, my bad.
No, it took a while. And in fact, the first time they tried to resend it, they sent the wrong code. So it didn't resend the message. It was only 40 minutes after the initial message was sent out that the correct cancellation went out.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
So what happened was actually very telling in a way, because some radio and television stations, actually a lot of them, didn't do anything at all. So they did not broadcast this message. And that, in a way, is a problem because the whole purpose of the system is to relay a national emergency to everybody.
Yeah.
Now, in many of these cases, it may be that the people in charge said, there's no information here. We have no real – I mean, it's a confirmed code, but there's no confirmed information, and we have nothing to share with people. So why would we go ahead and do this when we don't have any information we could give them?
Yeah, they were standing by to broadcast – whatever the major announcement was about the attack.
Right. Some of them hadn't even signaled the alert, right?
Mm-hmm.
The programming just kept on going, but other stations did. Some of them didn't know what to do. So some of them weren't doing it on purpose. Some of them weren't doing it because they didn't know what they were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a few actually broke into programming and said, we've received an alert from the emergency broadcast system. We know that there is a national emergency. We're awaiting for more information. Please stand by.
Yep.
And what Chris was talking about earlier was there are a couple of recordings on the internet you can listen to that were taken from that day.
Yes.
And one of them is from a radio station from Fort Wayne, Indiana called WOWO. And you can listen to that. You can find it on the internet. The actual – it's snippets from that.
Yeah. It's been
period.
Edited. It's been – sorry. I didn't mean to talk
over
you.
Go ahead.
It's been edited down so that you get – sections, the important sections of the broadcast. It's about what, 6 minutes or so long?
Right. Keeping in mind that whole window was more like 40 minutes. So this is 6 minutes of footage, 6 minutes of content from that 40 minute window.
Yeah. So basically what it said was, hey, there's something coming up. It's one of those things that would be funny if it weren't. If you don't put yourself back at that time.
Yeah, it would have been terrifying at the time.
It would have been terrifying because the person who was on the air was a
seasoned
news person.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was very serious and said, there's been a message. We're waiting word for what's going on. If you are listening and you are one of our reporters, come here immediately. We need you here right now.
Yeah.
And basically he was talking, not only to the audience, but to the other reporters who might be listening. The message itself actually said, message authenticator, hatefulness. This is an emergency action notification directed by the president. Normal broadcasting will cease immediately. All stations will broadcast EAN message one, preceded by the attention signal per FCC rules. Only stations holding NDEA may stay on the air in accord with state EBS plan. And, that would have scared the pants off of me.
Yeah.
And it took a while, as Jonathan said, kill EAN message. It was sent in error and it took a while for it to show up. But, the person who I was reading, I should have gotten the URL. If I can find it real quick for you guys, I will. The person who has actually posted photos of, scans of his copies of these messages, was saying, excuse the burn marks. I was smoking pretty heavily through this incident.
Yeah,
so I think he was kind of stressed out.
There's, if you listen to the recording from the WOWO incident, you actually hear the newscaster kind of chuckling once the once the order was sent out about this was a mistake. And, you know, kind of, cause, you know, clearly it was one of those stressful things, and the chuckling is him releasing that stress.
Yeah.
And it is an interesting moment in history to kind of pick up on that. So yeah, that was the only time that a national alert went out across the system. And again, it wasn't a real one. It was a mistake. And then what was supposed to happen is that, depending upon the nature of the emergency, stations are supposed to read from a predetermined script. Like it's, they're not supposed to just, you know, kind of provide commentary on it. There's a specific message that needs to be relayed. And, so that was the general purpose of the emergency broadcast system, but it was starting to show its age, particularly in the 90s, because you started to have other methods of getting content on your television besides broadcast TV. And the emergency broadcast system really affected radio and broadcast television. So there needed to be an overhaul of the system. And that's what happened in the late 90s. And in 98, you had the emergency alert system take its place. And now you might say, well, what's the difference? Well, for one thing, it doesn't just include broadcast stations. It also includes cable and participating satellite systems. So now you've got other methods of broadcast or you know, other methods of getting content over your television included in this. So that way, if a citizen is watching cable television or something on satellite TV, they could still have access to an emergency message, because clearly, you know, you don't want to leave everybody out. As people have more and more ways of watching stuff, it's harder to reach them in a centralized way.
Yeah, these systems were developed to run on AM and FM radio and the local broadcast stations.
Right.
So now we've gone from, in the United States, let's say on average, probably three or four regular network broadcast stations, maybe a couple independents in the larger, you know, larger cities.
Yeah, something in the ultra high frequency.
Yeah, you know, maybe six to ten stations in big markets. Then you go to dozens or even hundreds of stations now with cable and satellite,
right?
You know, plus you know, the radio stations, which have exploded in number,
right?
Satellite radio and all the other media that we listen to now.
So yeah, the system.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, the system needed to evolve with that development, and of course, even now we're already seeing a need for that to find another way of reaching people, because as people start to use the internet to get content, now there's yet another avenue for information to get to them. But in, you know, this system was not designed with that in mind. So there's already another need coming out.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
But at, anyway, the way it works now, the National Weather Service actually has specific codes that they can attach to notices so that those digital codes will send the message just to the relevant regions.
Yeah.
So that way, if the National Weather Service detects that there's going to be, you know, a massive hurricane hitting the panhandle of Florida, it can send an alert to, say, Texas and Florida and, you know, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, mm-hmm. all those areas that could potentially be affected by heavy rains, winds, that sort of stuff. And the rest of the nation's unaffected.
Mm-hmm.
Or even the rest, you know, rest of certain states, like the northern part of the state might not be affected because they're far enough away from the coast where at least it's not going to be an immediate effect. They might not get the message either.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so that the right information gets to the right people. I mean, it makes sense. You know, you don't want to send out a message to the entire nation that, for something that's just going to affect a relatively small area of the nation as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is big. So, yeah, it was it's something that has evolved over time. And the other thing I was going to talk about was what happened on November 9th, 2011.
Yeah. There is one sort of interesting footnote.
Mm.
To the EBS era passing from to the EAS era, EBS was not activated during the September 11th, 2001 attacks,
yep.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
that they chose not to use the alert at that time.
Yeah, particularly since the attacks affected multiple targets in multiple cities.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It would have affected even more. Had not the flight in Pennsylvania gone down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So just sort of an interesting footnote there.
Yeah.
But yes, on November 9th, 2011, the EAS made its debut.
Yeah. And the system had been in place. But
right.
What happened was because the system was
well, that's right.
Unveiled in 98.
But yeah, the EAS was actually what would have been used in
right.
September 11th.
Right. So on November 9th, 2011, what happened was it was tested nationally.
Right.
And this was the first time any of these systems had ever been tested on a national level, meaning that every participating station was going to display the test at the same time. And that time was going to be it was 2 p.m. Eastern on November 9th, 2011, which means that if you didn't know about it ahead of time and
mm-hmm.
you turned on your television, you would see this alert and you think, oh, this is irritating. This is that one of those stupid tests. And you change the channel and that alert is still going and it's going on this other channel. Uh-oh, this is something. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of messages that were sent out before 2 p.m. November 9th, 2011 to let people know, hey, this is going to happen. Don't worry. The zombies aren't here yet.
Right.
Or whatever other national emergency you might be able to conjure up in your mind. I just cannot imagine a national emergency at this point that does not involve zombies.
Right, right. Well, there are, according to the Christian Science Monitor, there were 14,000 and more broadcast stations, both for TV and radio, plus more than 10,000 cable TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all being done at the same time. It's able to reach a lot more people. But they're already talking about how they can reach people via text message and in other locations. You know, they're already talking again about how they can improve this system to make it reach more people,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, kind of funny since it probably reaches more now than it ever has before. But
I can imagine that
looking
it's
for
going
way to
improve. It's going to do things like promoted tweets.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are,
you laugh, but I can easily imagine that.
It's just, you know, and I absolutely see it. And it it's also important too to realize that this does more than just announce, say, an attack like Conelrad would.
Right.
There are more than I believe 80 different kinds of messages they can use the EAS for, including things like child abduction alerts.
I've seen those before too.
Yes, and here in Atlanta, we have a highway that goes around the outside of the city, known as the perimeter.
285.
For obvious reasons. Yeah, highway or Interstate 285. And there are electronic signs that they can use. And a lot of times you'll see stuff like, well, there's traffic up ahead, or be aware there's an accident. But they also use this messaging on those signs as well. So that's a way for people to, for the authorities to reach us with these kinds of messages.
On a side note, how can a highway that encircles a city that's all within one state be an interstate?
Jonathan?
I'm just asking. These are questions that appeal, that happen in my head, and I want to know.
Why do you drive on a parkway and park in a driveway?
I also want to know that.
I don't name these things. I just report them.
If our legs bent backwards, what would a chair look like? What if there were no hypothetical questions?
Oh, that's terrible.
All right. So now that we've totally killed that.
Yeah, the EAS is supposed to be able to turn on certain types of radios and TVs and other devices to allow people to receive these emergency messages, which, of course, will inspire many people to go, you know, the government is trying to take over our world, which is all right for them to say, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there are ways for them to reach us in to let us know if there's something important that we should be aware of.
Sure.
You know, it really has involved quite a bit since the 1950s when the first system was put into place.
Mm-hmm. And similar systems to this are in place in other countries around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We specifically focus on this one because it's the country we live in. So, again, apologies to all of our listeners overseas. Hopefully this was interesting to you just on the level of how do you take something as simple in concept as getting a message out, how do you take that and then apply it to a very complex world?
Uh-huh.
And it's an interesting approach. It's not necessarily the best one either. There may be other approaches that would be more efficient and more effective than the emergency alert system. But, you know, that's what we have. So if you guys live in a country that has a similar system, but it works on a different way, let us know. Tell us about it. You know, if you're familiar with that kind of thing, because I find it really interesting. I mean, it's a very important concept, and it's, like I said, this is not the only way to get it to work.
Yeah, and it's a challenge to reach that many people in a very short time to let them know that there's something big and important that they need to know. It's a matter of public safety or a public concern.
We've definitely come a long way from a guy on horseback riding, yelling out, "The British are coming! The British are coming!"
Or Pheidippides. Yeah, could you run these 26 miles?
Right.
24, but yeah, you know, anyway.
Yeah, come on. It's a couple of miles between marathoners.
Yeah, and if you are interested in hearing the bits about the EBS accident, search for WOWO EBS and you'll probably come up with it pretty quickly. The website I mentioned before is actually stlradio.net/pages/EBSaccident.htm. And that will show you what somebody – he was actually working at a radio station in Texas. Just a visual – you know, just something you can read about how he was feeling at the time. He was a former member of the military. So, you know, the idea of an attack I'm sure would have – you know, he would have been especially on his toes to broadcast this message. Both sort of semi-amusing and semi-chilling at the same time. Interesting to read, definitely.
Yep. So if you guys have any suggestions for future topics that we should tackle here on Tech Stuff, please send us a message. You can let us know in email. That address is techstuff@discovery.com, or send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us there with the handle TechStuffHSW. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.